Welcome back to another episode of Finance with Fernando. I am your host, Fernando, the Mortgage Maverick de Cunha. Make sure you follow me on all social media at Real Mortgage Maverick. Today, I am with my good friend, liaison in business, Jeffrey Green from Compass Real Estate. We are going to be talking about market trends, and we're going to get a little deeper into the data and make sure that you guys are aware of what to do next in this crazy market.
All right, so diving into this podcast, you know, is 2023 the year for the first-time homebuyer? And it's an interesting concept. And, you know, firstly, I want to say that, you know, if interest rates were still below 5% and we didn't have this crazy low inventory crunch, I honestly think there would be a massive amount of homes transacting, at least in the area that
It would be insane.
We would still be in the frenzy in the Northeast.
You would list your home and it would sell in an hour.
Yeah, I mean, similar, just like the market we were in, you know, there'd be multiple offers. And so let's talk about the inventory piece, right? So why is inventory so low, especially in these metropolitan areas? You know, not everywhere in the States, but in the metropolitan areas, you know, the commuter distance to the big cities. And, what's motivating sellers to sell right now, right? It's life-changing events. Divorce, grandparents are passing away.
More space for children.
Health issues. Yeah. They literally, you know, cannot fit another toy in another closet. And, you know, so that's pushing the sellers, but they're not transacting to slightly downsizing. They're not transacting to, you know, a slightly bigger house, better finishes, stuff like that. And really, if you think about it, you know, there's no motivation. I mean, they have no incentive. Sellers really have no incentive to sell. You know, Redfin says that 85% of homeowners have a locked-in mortgage rate lower than today's current rate. So they're going to step away.
Significantly lower,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, significantly lower.
That's what's really tough.
So, you know, are they going to step away from a low interest rate and then get back into the market? So that's holding up. And builders, you know, they really have no incentive to build. The margins are super slim, still have supply chain issues. And you know, think about it. You're building a brand new house in a high tax area like Northern Westchester, like they're getting creamed on, you know, local town and school taxes. So inventory has stayed very low, but who is buying, right? Because I think everyone can agree, you know, there still are transactions happening. And according to NAR 2022 trend report, 43% of homebuyers are millennials. So biggest generation.
It's a big number.
You know, biggest generation in America right
and
now.
But we expected that pre-COVID market too.
Yeah, this is not new.
I've been
new.
Hearing that for years.
Right, this is not new. But, you know, 81% of the younger ones are first-time buyers, mm-hmm. right? And 48% of the older millennials are first-time buyers. So, you know, they don't have that rate issue. Right,
they have no rate. They're actually paying, and I made a meme of this.
Right.
Right? Renting, you're paying full interest. Right. No, and I'm a landlord. I made this meme making fun of myself.
So what's happening to these millennials? I mean, they are growing up, right? They are having life-changing events. They're having kids, they're getting married, you know, they don't want to live with roommates anymore. They don't want to live in their parents', you know, lower level of a split ranch. So, anyways, I guess the point is that, you know, that's what's keeping the market in check in 2023. And it very well may be the year of the first-time homebuyers, especially kind of where this is going is that first-time homebuyers had it rough the last 2 years.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I would say almost impossible.
Like, the amount of strikeouts I think the first-time homebuyers were experiencing...
Right.
...led to so much discouragement.
It led to van life.
And it was van life, yes, down by the river. That's a Chris Farley throwback,
but you can't have kids in a van.
Well,
and you can't build equity in a van either.
Tiny homes are on the rise, but you know, it's uncomfortable. But the thing I will say to that is that, you know, I am probably, you could agree with this. It's been therapy. Like I've been more of a therapist than a mortgage person for the past 2-3 years.
Right.
More so than I've ever been in 12, 13 years of me doing this. And it's okay, but the thing is that, like, you know, when you're in a salesy role, which I don't consider myself, I'm more of an advisor of debt,
right?
Just the way you advise people on real estate, right? Like, I don't think I sell people mortgages.
Yeah.
Because you can't, I mean, if you need a mortgage, you need a mortgage. If you don't, you don't. You know what I mean? But I tell them the good, bad, and ugly, you know, and maybe sometimes they end up not moving forward with that financing, but mm-hmm. the first-time homebuyers got clobbered. But like we said before, they were the ones driving a lot of the market as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, there were buyers out there.
And you got to follow this to believe it.
You know, there were buyers out there that were trying to get FHA loans. They're trying to get 100% financing VA loans.
Yeah,
you know, they were trying to get closing costs reimbursed by the seller. So they were throwing these very high numbers out there to win the bid, effectively driving all of the other more conventional cash offers. But I think what we're seeing, and I guess my message to why this may be the year for first-time homebuyers is that, yes, your monthlies are up, but you can get a deal done in today's market.
You could.
You know, well, and you can get an FHA loan if you really need it.
I mean, you can get a VA loan. The seller market is softening.
Yeah, you know. I mean, it's still a seller's market, but it's a seller's market where they have some control over the price because of the lack of options.
Yeah.
But what they don't have control over is a buyer coming in, wanting to do home inspections, wanting to take their time, do their due diligence, bring a contractor through. They have those extra days.
Yeah.
You know, and I think for the millennial first-time buyers or even the Gen X first-time buyers, you know, this is a, again, don't step out of the market. Keep an eye on the market. Stay in the market. And if something is right, and those I call them the unchangeables, you know, location, tax district, and school district. Like, if those things all work, yes, your monthly will be high, but you're going to get a house without all the pain that you would have.
Well, 100%. Like, if you find, you know, what do they say about real estate? Location, 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 right?
Yeah.
You're conscious on taxes, you're conscious on the school.
Yeah.
Those three things, location, taxes, school, that drives where we live, no matter what. It's the same with the rental market. You know, it's funny, though, because, you know, talking about first-time homebuyers exiting the market or, like, the seller market softening, the reason why it was so difficult over the past 2 years is because the affordability was made there because of low housing rates, right? So even some people that didn't need to finance, they were like, I could get 3%. Why am I taking out of, you know, and it's a perfect storm. We were making a crap ton of money on our money, right?
Right.
We're making a ton of money.
Right.
I mean, you invested in
housing.
You know, Meta platform or, you know, Tesla.
GameStop.
Or GameStop. But I mean, like, you know, the tried and true Tesla, stuff like that. They did splits. You were making, like, my Tesla stock, like, quadrupled, you know, while over the past 2 years.
Right.
Now it's down, like, 30%, you know? So it's a changing market that so many different, so many other markets and industries are bleeding into real estate and changing that affordability. And now buyers are turning around and saying, you know what? You want $900 for your house, but my housing rate is 7% now.
Right.
You know what? I don't want to pay that payment. You know, you're either going to take a lower price or whatever, you know? So,
well, this brings us to kind of our next segment, right? So from, you know, we kind of understand, like, the real estate side of baking a better offer and better contract. That's more buyer, you know, risk. There's less risk on the buyer, but, like, what can we do on the financing side? You know, like, are there some options to help buyers kind of bridge the gap?
Well, of course. I mean, like, you know, the first thing, which I say it nonstop in all my videos, is building the right team, right? Mm. Because we work in tandem, right? Your real estate agent, your mortgage person, if they don't work in tandem and they're not watching out for your best interest,
right?
Even if you
honest,
win the
an honest,
yeah, honest yeah. transparency, like, even if you win the bid, you buy the house, when the dust settles, you may have buyer remorse.
Right.
You may feel like, wow, I paid way too much in closing costs. I could have got a better rate.
Right.
You know, like, all this remorse comes out, right? And I've heard horror stories recently over the past 2 years. Agents not doing something. You know, the mortgage person all of a sudden, like, leading someone to discount points they didn't even know they were paying for a lower rate. It's just a nightmare, right? So the right team is number one. Most valuable, hands down, in any industry, not even just in real estate. Number two is the fact that there are programs and there are tools now on the financing side, like temporary rate buy downs.
Right. That's
an interesting one. To make it more affordable, you know, like, so we have 1 year buy downs, 2 year buy downs, 3 year buy downs. We have multiple year buy downs where it's, you know, 3% lower rate on the first year, 2% lower on the second, 1% lower on the third, and then it goes to whatever that market rate is.
Right.
Just allowing that entry level for buyers to say, you know what? Okay, fine. On year four, my rate may be 7%.
Right.
But for the first year, I'm paying 4%. Well, then I'm paying 5%. Then I'm paying 6%. You know.
I think that's a great tool for the buyers out there right now too, because a lot of these buyers are working their way up a potential career ladder. So it kind of helps them. Look, you're getting into a house that you love. Maybe it's really your 5-year house. You know, maybe it's a little bit, you're kind of extending your budget
just
a little high.
Stone. Yeah.
But if you do the buy down, your monthly's not going to kill you, and you kind of know you have some.
You have runway, basically, to figure it out. You know what I mean?
You have a couple of years to increase your wages, you know, to increase your employment.
Absolutely.
Income. And that, so you can keep your kind of housing budget in check.
Well, and that's why with affordability running away from us.
Right.
You know, not only just, I mean, it's not just affordability of real estate, right? We're talking about real estate, but look at affordability for groceries.
Right.
You know, I don't know
inflation,
what type, you know, that's just inflationary, right?
Yeah.
We're feeling that. Mortgage rates run parallel to inflation. It's just tried and true.
Yeah.
They don't identically do that, you know,
right.
but if you look at markets, they run, and people like comment all the time, and I love you guys commenting, oh, what are you, an idiot? You don't pay attention to economics. Yeah, but most people that watch this stuff don't know about that. But so they run parallel. So as inflation decreases, rates will decrease. But this allows you to still have your foot in the water, right? To say, you know what? We're looking to buy a house.
Right.
If that dream house comes on the market, imagine you look for 2-3 years for your dream home, and then all of a sudden you're like, screw it, 7%, I ain't buying anymore.
Right.
And then your dream home comes on the market, and you have the ability to negotiate inspection, all this stuff.
Right.
And
it's
boom.
A real seller. Because any seller that's putting their home on the market right now
is trying to sell.
You know, or they have a better opportunity.
I mean, so Jeff represents me on deals, right? And like the funny thing is, like, we talk about this all the time because I'll look at a property.
You're not a real buyer.
I'm not a real buyer. No. But the thing is that, like, you know, being in the real estate industry and knowing so many different professionals, I always try and get opinions on people, right? From people, I should say. And I get opinions on homes that I'm looking at. Looking at some of these homes, it's one of those things where you always give me the opinion, like, I ask, do you think this value is going to be there in 5 to 10 years? Now, this is a property I would most likely live at over 10 years.
Sure, but you don't want to.
So I don't want to look at it that way. But, you know, the thing is that it's like what Jeff said. Like, I have a house. I have a rate below 3%.
Yeah.
We're comfortable, but...
Well, you're that seller that's not really going to sell and upsize the lifestyle upsize right now. You know, you're that percentage.
So to me, I'm like, can I make my current property an investment property? Like,
sure.
And I never even brought this up to you, but
you
have
the low rate.
I'm like, okay, maybe I'll make this an investment property short term for a few years, move into the new one, you know, and like just stir the pot.
Like, so tell me more about the buy down. So the economics of the buy down, if a seller were to help bridge the gap, they say, look, Mr. Buyer, I know you love my house. I know you don't want to give me the number I want for it because my neighbor just sold for the same thing 9 months ago. But, you know, look, I'm really not negotiable on the price. Like, this is what I think it's worth. You know, so they could pay, they could buy down the rate.
So the buy down only makes sense if it's either paid by the seller or builder, right? Because if the buyer pays it, then they're
really
just buying down their own rate, right? So then it's like a permanent buy down.
Right.
But on a temporary rate buy down, and it's crazy because we're in this market now where this would never even be thought of.
We never got this last year.
We never even got this last year or the year before. We didn't need it, right?
Right.
But let's say the seller, instead of taking a haircut of 50 grand off of the price, you know, we work something up in the negotiation where we say, kick in a $15,000 or $20,000 credit.
Right.
And we'll apply that towards the rate buy down.
Yes.
Making the affordability for the buyer better.
Right.
Right. And you could do a permanent buy down as well, but it's not as impactful.
I mean, it's not as impactful out of the gate.
Correct.
It's not going to lower the monthly.
Yeah. Like, so a permanent rate buy down, let's say 15 grand gets you a point off of the rate.
Right.
Whereas a temporary rate buy down of 15,000, you know, will give you 3% off
the
first year, and then 2 year, and then one, you know, so you're getting that lower rate entry level.
Right.
You know?
And then potentially with the idea, maybe you...
A refi boom.
A refi. Happen.
Because that...
Look, I am hesitant to say bank on the refi boom.
I don't think...
What are you going to refi
at
5.5? Like,
well, the conversation I have with people is not, don't bank on it, but it's once inflation is curbed, rates are going to deflate. Are they going to go to 3? Absolutely not. 3?
No.
3 was... We've never had 3.
Fed wanted to prevent a total economic disaster
collapse
during unforeseen pandemic.
So I think that's just not going to happen.
I think most people have got the message.
And I think right now what's happening is that we're talking about sellers. We're talking about a softening on the seller side a little bit.
Right.
You're going to see seller credits become more prevalent.
Right.
And I think that's where that's the turn of the buyer seller. You know, you're not
the
gonna
balancing
see it. You're not, yeah, you're not gonna see mm-hmm. like people are like, oh, it's gonna completely go buyer. Well, inventory is preventing that from happening.
Absolutely.
So until inventory increases, it's never gonna be full buyer.
Right.
So I think,
and it's never gonna go back pre-pandemic.
No,
I mean, price wise.
No, I don't see that happening because, and we have a number for that, but because
of the millennials.
I think the return of the seller credit is prevalent, and I think you're gonna have more negotiating options.
Right. So buyers out there, wrap up segment one and two. So basically from the real estate side, we have way more things we can do. We can take our time, we can really unpack and do our due diligence on a house, and we can get creative with the financing
yep.
around even ARMs, you know, 5/1 ARMs,
yeah,
stuff
exactly.
like that. Like
instead of doing that traditional 30-year
right.
fix.
And you could take your time, you can breathe during the process. There's not five other buyers breathing down your neck to get the house. Mm-hmm. And you can make smart decisions.
I agree, because everything was rush the
past
2 years.
Oh, so
rushed.
Oh my
God. Now, the one thing I will say about the
poor home inspectors. Can you be there tomorrow at 9:30 in the morning?
Or like later today, it's 9 a.m. The temporary buy down, though, the one thing that I will mention, it's only for 30-year fixed rate products.
Right.
It is not for ARMs.
Right.
Even though ARM rates are lower,
yeah.
you can't use the temporary buy down for ARMs.
I mean, and I hate to say this, because I know you're a big proponent of 30-year fixed, but if you have the budget to do a monthly,
I actually
a higher
do
monthly.
ARMs.
But think of it this way. Interest rates are up, right? If you have the budget, you just don't want to use it all towards housing, it's not a bad idea to do a 15-year fix. I mean, you will pay a lot less in interest.
Where
with
are you
the
going with this, Jeffrey? Where are you going with this, my friend? You know I hate Dave Ramsey.
I'm just saying, if you are being conservative about your home purchase.
I mean, okay.
And you're arguing
this,
I don't
want to
buy right now because I don't want to pay all this money in interest. If you
yeah,
do
but,
a 15-year
yeah,
year fix.
The problem with a 15-year fix is that a 30-year is, let's say, 7%. A 15, let's say it's 6%. So it's 1% difference.
Yeah, it's not a crazy
but
better
But your payment
deal.
Is, more. It's 25% more, right? So,
right?
So looking at affordability, if you didn't want to afford...
I'm saying if you could afford it.
Oh, if you could afford
if
it,
you
then,
could
then
afford
it is what it is.
Because then you're paying less than it
is. But this is the thing. This is the only thing I'll say, and I know we're going to move on. And the one thing I'll say is that it's a buying time in the market. Like as far as mutual funds,
that's
stocks,
right.
all this stuff, right?
Right, right.
So once again...
There's an opportunity.
Have the flexibility.
Yeah,
talk to an FA.
Don't tie up all of your... Don't stop contributing to your retirement fund.
I mean, I'm
to
still
do
buying
thing.
Into, like, so every Wednesday
yeah,
I still buy crypto.
Crypto right.
is dead right now, but I buy crypto. Ethereum and Bitcoin.
All right,
Bitcoin,
so,
you know?
So moving on, we got a couple articles to talk about. So we're going to dive into an article that Zillow Stats put out. And Zillow, you know, national company, they're very good with
Zestimates
their,
or?
Not no. Zestimates.
They are good with some reporting, though.
But I mean, they have a lot of data. You know, because they have
yeah.
a lot of information
and
coming into the system.
Yeah.
So the article, the headline is, spooky season is here to stay. Mortgage affordability may never recover. And look, I know that sounds doom and gloom. And, you know, spooky season is Halloween.
It is Halloween.
But I think, again, what they're trying to say, what Zillow is trying to tell everyone is that, look, 3% is not the norm. You know,
yeah.
and you have to understand that. And again, like we talked about, you know, 3% rates was enabling buyers to buy homes that maybe they really couldn't afford all along, and they were driving the market up like you talked
yep.
about. And they goes and talk about, you know, it says, it reads, nationally, the median household could now expect to spend 30% of their income on principal and interest payments alone, which sucks. That's a lot. And an attack on taxes if you're in the Northeast or some other high tax
yep.
areas or California.
Yep.
And what they said was that the historical average share of income households, the households, you know, spend on their mortgage payments prior to 2021 was only 22.8%. So it's a 7% difference, like
yeah.
a 7% increase in how much if you make, just for to throw some numbers out there, if you make $1,000 a month, you used to spend, you know, $220 or $230 on your housing, and now you're spending $300. And that adds up if, you know, when you get into higher,
yeah, with
higher
bigger,
numbers.
Yeah, bigger
and
nuts.
And basically yeah. what they're saying is, so we're in a position that's called, you know, it's housing burden. And this is nationally speaking. So we are heading into an area where, you know, affordability is an issue. But I think what the article is trying to say is like, look, it's just something that we're gonna have to deal with, because what I liked is they flipped it on its head and said, okay, so No, this isn't a surprise. Everyone's talking about it, affordability. But they run the numbers in a way that says, look, so how much would markets need to fall to actually match
level,
this housing?
Level out the
affordability. Yeah. So they said, okay, to put the, you know, put this into context, in order to return to historical average share of household incomes, back to that 22.8%. So with today's interest rates, the 50 sort of bigger markets, the 50 metropolitan markets, would have to come down 25%.
And so values would have to drop 25%.
Values would have to drop 25%. And they basically tell you, you know, some areas it might just be 3%, some areas it might be 40%. But they basically are saying, you know, buy, and they word for word, buyers who are trying to wait out the market for the affordability to fix, for, you know, for things to become more affordable again, will likely be waiting for a long time. I mean, they're basically just saying, look, you need to understand what has happened, you know, and understand that, look, this isn't, you know, buying GameStop on Robinhood where someone turns off the buy button and all the markets are going to drop 25%. It's not, unfortunately, it's not going to happen
Supply and demand are preventing that from happening. I do like what you said. You gave an example before about going into COVID, how if someone could afford, let's say, a Honda lease.
Right.
And then all of a sudden we go into COVID and, you know, now instead of them, you know, because of lower rates,
right,
instead of them affording that Honda, they're going for the Maserati lease or
something like that. Their expectations are completely changed.
Completely different, you know. And I think what happens in real estate in so many industries, and this is why, like, as consumers, and I see this, in, you know, like in my personal life, we're behind, like, so media says something today, but it's been happening for 2 months prior.
Right.
You know, so we're behind on news, right?
Right.
And depending on whether you watch the news every day or you follow, you know, your news outlet is like Facebook, you're even that much more behind. You know, it depends.
Right.
It depends on where you get your news. But you're 100% correct. I mean, I think the big thing that we have to realize here is a 20 to 25% drop in value.
It's just...
It's crippling. I mean, so I looked up, we talked about this before we got on camera, and I was like, what about 2008, right? Everyone's comparing 2022 to 2008.
Well, that's the clickbait.
That's the clickbait,
like,
correct.
We're not.
No, we're not, but yeah, you're right. Because 2008 was a different beast. Anyone under the sun could get financing. There were no checks and balances on 100%. Financing.
Yeah.
There were no income. It was just stated income. It was stated assets.
Right.
It was used gift funds from, you know, your cousin. It's not really your cousin. It's someone you met on the street.
Yeah, you were just telling, like, the bank that you made $200,000.
That's it. And everyone was just writing it up.
You were getting 7%.
So there was so... And now we're the completely opposite, right? Like,
that's right.
It's gotten a little more lenient since 2020. But I remember in 2020, the lender that I was working... That I previously was working with, they weren't doing loans for anyone putting less than 20% down for several months. They were like, you have to put at least 20% down
because they
for us to even consider it. And they were like, your FICO score has to be a 760 or above. I'm like, you know, that's the creme de la creme.
Well, they were being
cautious. In a normal market,
on a market
share. Exactly. Yeah. So now we're at a point where, you know, if you're saying a 20-25% decrease, 2008, the estimate was about 20% decrease in value.
Right.
With the collapse of 2008. I just said it to Jeff. Let's say my house is worth right now in this market, which is basically still low inventory seller's market, $550,000, right? If my home value goes down 20%, that's $110,000 decrease in value. I paid $450,000 for my house back 8 years ago.
Right.
So you're telling me that if this market reverses, collapses, my house is actually worth less than when I bought it 8 years ago in 2014? It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up.
The numbers around prices coming down to meet buyers' affordability issues is not there.
It's just not there.
And I think it's because COVID gave buyers permission to move up one segment in the housing, you know? And look, keep in mind what happens is that if you're a $1 million buyer and rates go up, maybe you drop into the 750 to 9 segment.
Yeah.
So those buyers, those upper buyers don't disappear.
No.
Now, the top of the market are usually cash buyers, so... I don't know. You know, like our interest rates, we haven't talked about that. You know, our interest rates even affecting cash buyers other than the fact that they're trying to leverage the fact that the market softened to get better deals. But I think their
conversation's more like my investment portfolio
is down.
Down 30%.
Well, you don't live in your investment portfolio. So, Well, and this this ties into this article, you know, that you were...
So this was from Keeping Current Matters, and it was basically, you know, I love the headline, and it was called The Equity Buffer, right? So we're talking about equity. We're talking about individuals like us that have homes for the long term, have some built equity, and we benefited from these rising home prices. Like, everyone was like, oh, this is great. My house is worth
more.
Yeah,
my net worth went up,
Who gives a crap if it's worth more, right? If you're not selling, it's worth more, but you're not selling, right? So if you're not selling, and if you're buying, you're buying at a height, you're selling at a height, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same. But this is one of the stats that I read in the article. U.S. households own $41 trillion in owner-occupied real estate, just over $12 trillion in debt, and the remaining $29 trillion in equity. The national loan-to-value in Q2 of 2022, which 29.5%, which is by far the lowest since 1983.
That's a good thing.
So like when Jeff and I were talking about this, him as an agent thought of it differently than the way I look at it. Because when I talk about loan to value, the lower your loan to value, so the lower you owe on the value of your home, the better it is on the financing side, right? And the more equity you have, the more you could access equity.
Right.
The more you're going to receive when you sell the property. So it's just...
You could do home equities and...
You could do a home equity and then purchase another property. I have a deal right now where they own a primary. They're buying a second home in a completely different state. They have a HELOC. You know, we got them set up there. They're taking the money. They're, you know, so having equity is a good thing.
Right.
And I think we've all experienced that. You know, during COVID... One of the drawbacks was that lenders were limiting how much equity you could take out because they didn't want it to be bubble.
Yeah, if the market went down,
exactly. And there's a little leniency there, but the rising inflation still causes that risk and that concern.
Did it say what it was around 2008?
2008.
Like, there was one graph. I remember reading the article.
Yeah, so
like it said 2008.
So, yeah. So the big thing here with an equity buffer is the fact that homeowners are protected.
It was 55% loan to value.
Exactly. So homeowners, the purpose of the article is basically to explain that we're protected by a buffer of equity.
Right.
So if the market...
If there is a market shift.
Exactly.
Your neighbor's not going to foreclose.
That's exactly right. Because in 2008, I lived here and my neighbor across the street maybe didn't have enough equity, right?
Or lost their job.
They lost their job. They were over leveraged. They lost the house.
And then
that lowered
went down
my value.
5%.
Correct.
And he was underwater.
Exactly.
Right.
So like the equity buffer conversation is really a great topic.
Yeah.
Because if you do own a home and there is, you're protected. If there is a downturn in the market.
Right.
I don't anticipate seeing a 20% downturn, but if it's 5%, you still have a ton because the national average is still at the lowest at 29.5%.
I think it also shows that since 2008 and what happened, people have been much more conscious and much more fiscally responsible.
Well, and the appreciation of real... Look at the appreciation of real estate.
And the price.
You know, I have my... So my father brings up like his house. He's like, back in 2007, I could sell my house for $800,000. And it's like worth $400,000. And I'm like, but it's once again, it's like when people bring up rates to me.
Yeah.
Rates in March were 3%. They're now 7%.
Right.
It's the past. We have to move on.
Yeah.
Right.
You have to move forward. Always.
But this equity buffer is really an intriguing thought.
On a national level, the odds of a 2008 specifically a foreclosure or short sale crash, it's just not there. I mean, this is protecting us.
Yeah. Correct.
Obviously. Exactly. Employment, other things happening, but from
there's just other deciding
people
factors.
People have meat on the bone in their houses.
Exactly.
So, and I wanted to, so just real quick, I'm going to transition to my local market and some of the numbers of mine, and I'll keep this kind of quick because it's kind of boring data stuff. But look, September this year, if we compare it to September the year prior and September 2019, you know, just to kind of show everybody, like this inventory thing is not it's not a theory. You know, like you can
it's
really.
It's not a fad.
It's not some thing that brokers are talking about to, you know, just to like dupe people and to have conversations with them. You know, in new listings, new homes hitting the market, 2022, there were 178 in my market, Northern Westchester. 2021, there were 221. So there are more that hit the market, new listings. In 2019, there were 344. I mean, that's almost double the amount of new homes hitting the market in 19. And again, I mean, it's just, this is what's keeping the prices where they are.
So they stepped back 2020, 2021.
Yeah, they've been less and less. I mean, 2021, I think it was primarily because sellers were like, I'd love to sell, but I just can't navigate getting back into the market. It's too white hot.
Yeah, they didn't know where to go.
And then, and then let's just talk about active listings. Like, so if you were to hit the market in Northern Westchester in October 1st, 2019, which was a pretty soft market, it was definitely a buyer's market, although good homes were still transacting, there would have been 1,257 homes. Same thing, October 1st, 2021, there would have been 558 homes. I mean, that's already a huge drop.
And then it's over 50%.
And then October 1st, 2022, 420 homes. And again, this brings up the like, well, Jeff, why don't I just wait for the inventory to go up? You know, and I think it's like, look, guys, what we're saying is that there is a big generation of people that own the homes. The baby boomers typically own a lot of the homes. They're not ready to move out yet. And that's going to take time. And until this rate issue changes, they're not really incentivized to move.
Well, I 100% agree. I think baby boomers have a big part of it. And I think people even like our age in their 30s and 40s that may wanted to upgrade or something like that. Like I just spoke to someone who was talking about going half on an investment property with me. And she was like, I dumped $250,000 into my house during COVID, which I don't agree with, but I was
probably
like—
probably because she couldn't figure out how to just buy a better house.
Well, so that's what she said. I was like, $250,000, that's a lot. I'm like, that's a lot of money, you know?
Right.
And she was like, well, we just couldn't upgrade to what we wanted. Mm-hmm. So, but then she had supply chain issues and, you know, getting a contractor.
Yeah, you deal with that.
So there's all these other issues, but I think you're 100% right. I think we're seeing this, the supply and demand is still kind of dictating what people are doing.
Well, this goes back to the, you know, is 2023 going to be the year of the first time buyer? And it's like, look, yes, it is. They're going to buy those houses that are on the market.
Yeah.
And because they're serious about buying, those sellers are serious about selling.
Yeah.
And we kind of took everybody else
out. It's like, you could even mention applications, right?
Talk about a loan
application. So loan applications dictate a lot of how sales work because a lot of consumers will go to an agent first and say, I want to look at a house. The good agents, and I know you guys are watching, will turn around and say, you got to talk to my mortgage person first. You got to get pre-approved. We got to check all those boxes, and then I'll bring you out, I'll drive you around, whatever. Well, the fact of the matter is that loan applications hit a 20 to 25 year low just last month, right?
Right.
So what does this mean? It means that I have a part-time job. No. I'm a bartender. No, I'm an admin for my office. No. What this means is that there's less competition for the people I have pre-approved.
I think there's a good spin.
So I have over 100 pre-approved clients that have been looking for the past 2-3 years.
Right.
And a lot of them, the affordability has changed.
Yep.
And the ones that were on that debt to income ratio that was close to 50%,
right,
now with the rising rates, they can't afford.
Yeah,
right?
they're priced.
So that's terrible.
Right.
And they reach out and they're like, you know, and I'm constantly saying in communication, and I'm like, just so you know, rates have gone up. We have to change your affordability, change your letter.
Right.
The ones that are still tried and true looking to purchase real estate and are able to afford it now have a smaller pool, right?
Well,
because the ones that should have been in that pool in the first place.
Right.
Are now no longer in it because the affordability isn't there.
They simply can't be.
They can't.
Or they were speculating on the market and they were only buying because of rates.
So that's probably the biggest part of this is the speculation. How many people, and I like, think about how many new realtors entered the market over the past year.
Probably the same amount they're gonna be exiting.
Same with mortgage people. So I read a stat where over 200,000 mortgage licenses were forfeited just within the past 3 months.
Oof.
Like, so these were new mortgage people coming into the market
over the
refi, past 2 years,
you know,
refis, all this stuff, right? So now think of it from a buyer perspective, right? You have a smaller pool. Why do you think I say in my own social media, don't stop looking, right? We don't stop looking.
Right.
Brittany and I continuously, you know, are looking for anything, investment properties, second homes, primary residences, whatever is out there, I'm like, I want to look at it. I want to see everything.
Yeah.
And I know I'm super annoying, but the fact of the matter is that one time that you don't look, that's the one.
Sure.
Right? And then you're done. So I think the spin on it is you're fighting less of a fight. It's still a fight, but it's not like head to head with someone that really shouldn't even be at the table anyway.
Yes.
You know, you're with your peers.
That's what we were talking about when we started off the podcast. It was the buyers that were probably a bit maxed out that were doing a lot of financing. They didn't really care about the price of the house because they were looking at this low monthly.
Yeah.
And these buyers, a lot of buyers out there, that's what was driving the house prices up because they were overbidding cash offers.
Do we literally just do a callback to the beginning of our episode where we were saying first-time homebuyers were driving the market?
Well,
this was unintended. This was not.
Well, it was the first time.
But you're right.
It was the pre-approved a lot. I saw it a lot. So if you were doing on the listing side, right? I represent a seller. We'd have 10 offers, and we'd have these 5% down offers, or we'd have a 3.5-ish FHA offering on a $600,000 house, offering $70,000 over, because it's all financed anyways. You know, their monthly went up a little, but it's such a good rate.
They're like, what does it matter?
So what happened? There was a cash buyer in the mix. There was a 25% down, you know, waiving inspection buyer doing regular conventional. So what does the seller do? They go back to these, I'd say more.
And now it's a war.
Well, they go
and
back
it sells
to these,
for a million.
And say, hey, look. They would say, hey, look. I hate to say it, but we have a much higher offer than yours. But you're all cash. If you match it, I'll give you the deal.
Yep.
I think it's that high. Those buyers that were just throwing numbers out there that are now not in the market. And so if you're a buyer and you're 10% down, even if you're 5% down conventional, but you're being somewhat conservative about your monthly, that you're able to get a good house your terms.
You're getting a look.
Yeah.
You weren't even getting a look.
Right.
In the past 2 years.
Right, or you're getting someone with cash was meeting you.
Exactly. Offer. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Cool, man. Well, I'm Jeffrey Green from the Hey Green team at Compass. Thank you guys for tuning in, watching this whole episode. You can reach me at heygreen.com and Fernando, the mortgage maverick.
I have my own shoes that say that as well. Listen, Jeffrey and I.
Should we raffle off a pair of Converse?
The Mav ones?
Next time. Watch the Mav ones. Watch the next
one. So we're going to do some fun sweepstakes coming up for sure. You know, this is a new vlog for us. I think we're going to have a ton of fun and hopefully you guys find a lot of enjoyment and, you know, find resource in what we do. We're your new neighbors. We'll catch you on the next one.